welcome to this week's Expert HR podcast with me, Ellie Gelder. The TUC has long campaigned for workers to sit on company boards and remuneration committees and to make chief executives more accountable, and it seems that the newly formed government may make this a reality, with Theresa May recently vowing to put worker representatives on the boards of major companies. This would follow the lead taken by several other European countries, such as Germany, France, Denmark and Sweden, where it is already common practice for workers to be represented on the boards of companies. While it may be some time before we see such changes implemented in the UK, you might be wondering what employers' current obligations are in relation to worker representatives. With me to talk us through the law, as well as the practicalities of worker representation, is Employment Law Editor Fiona Cumming. So Fiona, what exactly is Theresa May proposing?
Well, it's part of her plan to reform boardroom governance, and she's proposing to put worker representatives on the boards of large companies. More than that, we don't really know at this stage because no details have been given.
So we don't know how that's going to be implemented or when at the moment?
Absolutely, it's just a plan.
Okay, so Fiona, other than trade unions, what current arrangements do we have in the UK for worker representation?
Well, we have joint consultative committees, or works councils as they are also known, and they've existed in certain industries for a number of years. But a decade ago, regulations were introduced as a response to the EU Information and Consultation Directive, and these give employees in the UK a right to be consulted on key matters that affect their employment.
But the regulations don't mean that all companies have to establish formal works councils or committees.
No, the regs actually only apply to businesses with 50 or more employees, and the right is to some extent limited.
How so?
Well, before the regulations were introduced, there was no general statutory information and consultation obligation in place in the UK, and a requirement to inform and consult applied, as of course it still does, but it was only in specific circumstances, such as business transfers and collective redundancies, or on transnational issues. So following this background, the government's approach in implementing the directive was to include an additional, more wide-ranging general consultation obligation, but importantly, it applies only on demand.
Meaning?
Well, that the obligation is not automatic and it only applies if either the employees make a request to initiate the consultation procedure or if the employer decides to initiate it.
Okay, so if an employer didn't want a works council then and the employees don't request one, then there's no obligation on an employer to set one up?
Exactly.
And if the employees do want to establish a works council committee, then what's the procedure for establishing one?
Well, there's quite a prescribed process, and I won't burden you with all the details now, but the nub of it is that employees can kickstart the procedure if the proposal is supported by at least 10% of the business's employees, and that must amount to at least 15 employees.
Okay, and then what happens?
Well, provided it's a valid request, an employer must then start negotiating the terms of a formal agreement, setting out how the works council is going to run and what its remit will be.
And is there any time frame for this?
Well, negotiations about the terms of the agreement, they should be started as soon as reasonably possible, but in any event, no later than 3 months after the request has been made.
And what sort of matters should or can be included in the agreement?
Well, the agreement should address the framework for the consultation, as well as what the employer will actually be consulting on with the employees.
So in respect to the framework, we're talking about things such as the number of reps on a committee and the frequency and timing of consultation?
Yes, and also things such as the method of consultation. For example, you could have consultation on complex issues taking place by way of a formal meeting, and then consultation perhaps for simpler issues happening by written communication, such as by the intranet or email.
And what about the areas of consultation? Is there any limitation on those?
No, the parties are free to negotiate whatever terms they can, although employees are likely to want to be far more widely informed and consulted than employers feel comfortable with. However, if the parties can't reach agreement on the terms of the agreement, then the fallback provisions of the regulations will automatically apply, and these set out the areas where the employer is specifically obliged to inform and consult.
Right, so what are those?
Well, the first is the business's economic situation, although the duty here is only to inform. The second area, well, it's concerning employment prospects. So, for example, that could be an employer facing a redundancy situation, and the duty here is to inform and consult, and that's with a view to reaching agreement. And that's also the same with the third and the last area, and that's about decisions that are likely to lead to, say, substantial changes in work organisation or contractual relations.
So there's a bit of a crossover here then between consultation requirements that exist under the collective redundancy and 2P legislation regarding collective redundancies and business transfers. So does this mean that an employer has to have two separate consultations on the same issue?
Potentially, but if the fallback provisions apply, then an employer can opt to consult under the relevant redundancy or 2P legislation rather than the information and consultation regulations. And if there's a negotiated procedure in place, then the parties are also free to agree that and to avoid dual obligations.
So what should employers do if they haven't received a request to establish this process, or their workforce has just reached 50 employees, which means that the regulations apply?
Well, one option, of course, is always to do nothing and adopt a wait-and-see approach. And this is likely to be the case, say, where an employer already has an existing consultation process in place, or it might be because it's about to go through a major restructuring. However, it might also be because the employer thinks it's unlikely that it's going to receive a request, although here they should take care so that they're not caught out because they might have underestimated, say, their employer's interest, and in those circumstances, they won't be prepared.
Okay, so a word of caution there then.
Mm-hmm.
And what about employers taking the initiative?
Well, some employers may certainly want to do this and then try to negotiate the creation of a works council on the most favourable terms for them. And as with any negotiation, in those circumstances, it's best for employers to set out their best position and to be prepared to, say, compromise on the less important points so that they really obtain something that is workable.
So it's really a judgment call for employers.
Yes, and they need really to make the decision based on their knowledge of the workforce. However, a prudent employer should probably carry out a review of any existing information and consultation arrangements and assess whether there is a risk of a request being made or if there are any benefits to a request being made either by the employees or, say, by the employer initiating the process. And an employer might be able to have the upper hand in any negotiations with employees if it's already, you know, considered all those matters and taken account of what procedure might be the most appropriate.
So some benefits there. Any other advantages?
Well, other advantages can be that it's good internal PR for employers who sell it to, are seen as selling it to their employees. And it can be a means to get the workers more involved in the business. And the employer can have the advantage of getting an angle on any concerns or indeed encouraging ideas that employees might have.
And I mentioned at the beginning that other European countries already have worker representatives on their company boards.
Yes, that's right. So to pick up one example you mentioned, Germany has a dual system of worker representation, and the works councils elected by employees represent them in operational matters, and trade unions represent workers' overall interests at the industry level. And interested subscribers can read more about this system of worker representation in Expert HR's Guide to Employment Law in Germany. And this covers this area as well as the other key elements of national law in Germany. And to find this guide, or indeed any of Expert HR's 42 other country guides, just click the tool drop-down menu on the homepage and you'll find them in the international manual.
That's great. And just finally, Fiona, you mentioned earlier that the current informing and consultation regulations are one of many examples of UK legislation that derive from European law. So presumably we don't yet know what impact Brexit will have on the existing law.
Yes, that's right. This is yet another area where we're just going to have to wait and see what impact Brexit has on the UK law that derives from EU directives.
Thanks very much, Fiona, for that rundown of what employers should already be doing to comply with the current obligations in relation to worker representatives. We'll obviously be closely monitoring the government's plans to enable workers to have board representation. And once we have more information, we'll let you know how employers might be affected. In the meantime, if you'd like further information on informing and consulting on employment matters and the law as it stands now, you can go to our Employment Law Manual tool and click on the Information and Consultation chapter in the drop-down menu. And that brings us to the end of this week's Expert HR podcast, which you've been listening to with me, Ellie Gelder. We'll be back next Friday, but until then, it's goodbye from us.